I remember standing in the middle of my backyard about 10 years ago, shielding my eyes from a brutal July sun and looking up at the roof of my shed. I had a single, rigid glass panel propped up against a sawhorse and a tangled mess of colorful wires in my hands, feeling completely out of my depth. The sun was providing all that free energy, beating down on my shoulders, yet I couldn't even get a small LED bulb to flicker. It felt like there was a secret language to the universe that I just hadn't learned yet. That is the thing about solar power. It feels like magic until you understand the simple physics of it. And once you do, you realize it is less about high-tech wizardry and more about being a good plumber for electricity. We are just moving a current from one place to another, making sure the pipes are the right size so nothing bursts. You might be thinking that you need an engineering degree to offset your electric bill or to keep your fridge running when the grid goes down. But I will tell you why that is not the case. If you can use a screwdriver and follow the path of a garden hose, you can grasp the basics of a home solar setup. It starts with the panels, which are really just collectors. They sit there and soak up photons, which knocks electrons loose and creates a flow of direct current. But that raw power is a bit like high-pressure water straight from a main line. It is too much and too erratic for your sensitive electronics to handle on its own. That is why we have to talk about the heart of the system, which is the charge controller and the inverter. Before we get our hands dirty, I want to tell you about the time I thought I knew better than the manual. I was setting up my first small array to power a well pump. I was so excited to see the voltage climb on my meter that I decided to skip the fuse block between the panels and the controller. I figured it was just an extra point of failure, and I wanted the path to be as direct as possible. About 20 minutes into a clear afternoon, I heard a sound like a stray firework, a sharp electric pop, followed by the smell of ozone and burning plastic. A small surge had hit, and because I didn't have that $5 fuse to sacrifice itself, I ended up frying a $300 controller. I sat there in the silence of the woods, smelling my own mistake, and I learned right then that in solar, we never skip the safety valves. Protection is not an option. It is the foundation of the work. When we start preparing for a project like this, we begin with the orientation. I like to walk the perimeter of the house or the yard and just watch where the shadows fall. You are looking for the longest stretch of uninterrupted light, usually facing true south if you are here in the northern hemisphere. I usually take a compass out with me, but you can also just look at the trees. If you see moss growing thick on one side of a trunk, you know that side stays cool and shaded. We want the opposite of that. Once we find our spot, we have to think about the mounting. Whether it is on the roof or a ground rack, the goal is stability. These panels act like sails in a high wind, and you will feel a surprising amount of resistance when you try to move a large one. We want to bolt everything down into the rafters or into concrete footings, because the last thing we want is a summer storm turning our investment into a kite. Once the location is set, we gather our components. We have the panels, the heavy gauge wires, the charge controller, the battery bank, and the inverter. I always lay them out on a clean workbench or a piece of plywood first. I like to see the whole path of the energy before I start making permanent connections. It helps me visualize the flow. I check my wire ends, making sure the copper is bright and clean. If I see any dullness or corrosion, I snip it back and strip a fresh section. You want that connection to be tight and shiny, because any resistance at the terminal creates heat, and heat is the enemy of efficiency. We start the execution by connecting the battery to the charge controller first. This is a rule I never break. The controller needs to wake up and understand what voltage it is working with before the panels start shoving power into it. As I tighten the lugs on the battery terminals, I feel for that solid stop. You don't want to over-torque them and strip the soft lead, but you want them immobile. If I can wiggle the wire at all, it is too loose. Once the controller screen flickers to life, usually giving me a little digital wink or a green light, I know the brain of the system is awake. I keep them covered with a heavy blanket or the cardboard they came in while I am wiring them up. Even a little bit of ambient light can start generating a spark, and I prefer to work with cold wires. I click the MC4 connectors together. Those are the plastic weatherproof plugs on the back of the panels. You should hear a distinct plastic click. That sound tells you the O-ring inside has seated properly, and moisture won't get in there to rot your wires over the next decade. After the panels are linked, I run the main trunk line down to the controller, passing through a shutoff switch and a fuse, just like the one I forgot years ago. When I finally pull the blanket off the panels, I watch the controller. There is a specific moment of satisfaction when the charging light comes on. It is a quiet victory. You won't hear a motor hum or a fan whirl yet, but you can feel the energy if you look at the meter. The voltage begins to rise, filling the batteries like a slow, steady stream, filling a bucket. Once the batteries are topped off, we move to the inverter. This is the piece of equipment that takes that DC power and twists it into the AC power your house uses. I flip the big red switch on the side of the inverter, and that is when I hear the first real sign of life. A low, steady hum, and the soft whir of a cooling fan. I take a standard lamp or a power drill and plug it into the outlet on the inverter. When I squeeze the trigger of the drill and hear it roar to life, knowing that the power is coming directly from the sun hitting my roof, it changes how I think about my home. It stops being a box I pay rent or a mortgage on and starts being a tool that I am operating. As we wrap up, I spend a few minutes tidying up the wires. I use UV-rated zip ties to snug everything against the frame, so nothing is dangling or rubbing against sharp edges. Over time, the vibration of the wind can cause a loose wire to chafe against a metal bracket, and that is how shorts happen. I want everything neat, tucked away, and secure. I take one last look at the seals on my roof mounts, making sure the silicone is thick and uniform. We have spent all this time worrying about electricity. We shouldn't forget about keeping the rain out. Standing back and looking at a finished install, you realize that the sun is no longer just something that makes you sweat or fades your paint. It is a partner in your chores. You have built a system that catches the light and turns it into something useful. It requires a bit of maintenance, wiping the dust off the glass once a season and checking the tightness of the bolts. But the heavy lifting is done. You have taken a complex, intimidating concept and distilled it down into a few solid connections and a bit of common sense. That is the essence of being a homeowner. You don't have to know everything. You just have to be willing to learn the feel of the tools and the rhythm of the work.